Welcome to another ABC Radio National podcast. For more information, go to abc.net.au/rn.
G'day, I'm Maria Zylstra with Lingua Franca on the language of nationalism this week with respect to the word Macedonia, which is highly contentious, being the focus of a 15-year-long row between the Republic of Greece and that neighbouring country to its northeast that has, as its constitutional name, the Republic of Macedonia, Republika Makedonia. You might recall how the dispute was reflected here in Australia in the early 1990s, with mass demonstrations, daubing of slogans, and even the torching of churches in Melbourne, where the greatest number of Greeks and Macedonians live outside of their native territories. So, what's behind this name dispute? Loring Danforth, Professor of Anthropology at Bates College in Lewiston, Maine, in the US, sums it up like this.
Behind the name is all the glory and fame that's associated with Alexander the Great and ancient Macedonians. And so the issue is whoever can claim the name now supposedly has claim to being the descendants of Alexander the Great. And that's an aspect of nationalist ideology and things, but that's not a very persuasive argument from an anthropological point of view. In other words, whether ancient Macedonians were Greeks or not is not directly relevant to who has the right to be Macedonians now.
But you know the expression, Macedonia was, is, and always will be Greek? Years of United Nations brokered negotiations to try to find an agreeable alternative have come and gone, with no result. Meanwhile, a range of countries, including Australia, refer to it by the term, mind it's not a proper name, but just an interim way that the UN devised of referring to this sovereign state, the former Yugoslav Republic of Macedonia, while other countries, including that significant player in Balkan affairs, the USA, call it by the name it gives itself, the Republic of Macedonia, or, in short, just Macedonia, thus sidelining the whole affair. But Greece, nothing if not consistent in its opposition, earlier this month vetoed the invitation that was to have been extended to the former Yugoslav Republic of Macedonia to join NATO. A move too far? Well, some signs may now indicate something of a shift taking place, if you read between the lines, as does Aristotle Tsiampiris on the phone from Athens.
From April 1992 until recently, at least on an official and public level, the Greek position was we want a name that does not contain the word Macedonia. And so the Greek position was in that sense very strong and very difficult, not conducive to compromise. But Greece changed its position. So I think it was a realization that the Greek position was getting Athens pretty much, diplomatically speaking, nowhere, that necessitated a new position in conjunction with the fact that NATO membership was coming up and Greece had to have a position on the prospective NATO membership of FIRM.
So this new position is that it will accept the word Macedonia plus an adjective that delimits, then, the term Macedonia.
Precisely. There are some interesting things going on in Greece in the past couple of weeks. Officially, the position is the word Macedonia with a geographic connotation, for example, Upper Macedonia. So if it's Upper Macedonia, it's not the whole. So you cannot claim everything Macedonia. That's the thinking behind it. But in the past few days, there are rumors and also some statements by officials who forgot to use the geographic connotation, leading many journalists and analysts to suspect that maybe, just maybe, the Greek government might accept also the term New Macedonia or Republic of New Macedonia. Mind you, New Macedonia was proposed in 92 and was rejected by Athens. It had the term Macedonia. Nova Macedonia was proposed at the UN level in 1993, again rejected by Athens for the same reasons. But now there's this speculation.
Mm-hmm. And if I summed it up by saying that it's no longer the case that Macedonia was, is, and always will be Greek, how would you respond to that?
Well, Macedonia as a geographic territory has had a history of thousands of years. And Greek claims concerning the links and continuities with antiquity will remain and will not really be affected by a compromised Greek position, but at the same time, it will have to be better understood by both sides that a certain Slav nation does exist and live in this region and has come, and they have their own history, and they will have to face the fact that they have a more modern history, and that's acceptable.
And in those terms, then, the name New Macedonia, Nova Macedonia, would work.
It's not the official position yet, though, let me stress. But, for example, Nova Macedonia in Slavic, suggesting there's something new, and this could be the case.
Assistant Professor of International Relations at the University of Piraeus and Research Associate with the Hellenic Foundation for European and Foreign Policy, Elia Mep. Aristotle Tsiampiris, sharing his personal views there. But the anthropologist Loring Danforth explains how the people who call themselves Macedonian, living in the country they call the Republic of Macedonia, might not agree with that kind of delineation, perhaps even on the basis that while the ancient Macedonians might have used ancient Greek as a lingua franca, that doesn't necessarily mean that they were Hellenes, and that, well, what's all that ancient history got to do with the name of the country today, anyway?
As early as 1900, there were a few scholars and intellectuals claiming that Macedonians were a separate ethnic group or national group and were not Serbs, were not Bulgarians, were not Greeks. And in 1944, when the Republic of Macedonia was established as part of Federal Yugoslavia, at that point it was a subnational political entity, and Macedonian national identity began developing with the development of Macedonian Orthodox Church and Macedonian as a standard literary language in the 1940s, and since then, linguists around the world have recognized Macedonian as a Slavic language closely related to Bulgarian and a little less closely to Serbo-Croatian.
Yes, though many people seem to feel it's okay to say that Macedonian isn't really a language, it's just Bulgarian.
Okay, and the Bulgarian argument is that it's Bulgarian, it's a dialect of Bulgarian, and an argument you often hear in Greece is that it's not a language, it's a linguistic idiom or a mixture of Gypsy, Bulgarian, Greek, and Turkish, or it's a linguistic idiom of Skopje, which is the term often used for the Macedonian language in Greece, but that's not sound linguistics. Linguists recognize that determining whether something is a dialect of something else or whether it's a separate language is an issue that depends on political situation and not something that can be answered purely linguistically. For example, with Scandinavian countries, if there was one country known as Scandinavia, not three separate countries, Norway, Sweden, and Denmark, then there'd be one language called Scandinavian, not three different languages. And those three languages are all very close and can be understood among each other, but for political reasons, because there are three countries, each country has its language. And similarly, in the Balkans, each nation state wants its own language, and so around the world, Slavicists recognize Macedonian as a South Slavic language, even though it's very similar to Bulgarian.
Well, Slavic languages do have a lot in common, just that it was the most recent of the Slavic languages to be recognized.
Exactly. Because it's the most recent, it is vulnerable to charges that it's an artificial creation or, you know, Tito invented it for political reasons. And all languages in the standardization process have a certain sort of political and historical context to them. The fact that Macedonian language had a political context in which it was standardized doesn't mean it's not a language any more than the fact that the Greek language was standardized and established in a political historical context means that Greek isn't a language. And in terms of the name of the language, that's interesting because from a Greek perspective, often the language is not called Macedonian, but it's called Slavic, and the people are called Slav Macedonians.
Well, that presents a question in my mind, which is, what ought one to call those Macedonians who live in the region of Macedonia within the country of Greece, who identify themselves as Macedonian but not Greek?
That's an excellent
question. Want to call them Greek Macedonians?
But many of them do call themselves Greek Macedonians, Elena Macedonis in Greek, but many of them also call themselves Macedonians, and I have no problem with that. There can be more than one group of people with the same name, so we can have Macedonians in a national sense, we're Macedonians, we're not Greeks, and then you can have Macedonians in a regional or an ethnic sense, we're Macedonians and we are Greeks, and we're Greek Macedonians, just the way New York Times maps up the area, they have Macedonia country, and then Macedonia region of Greece, and as long as you're willing to explain what you mean, I don't see any problem, and that little ambiguity seems to me preferable to a situation where one group is denied the right to its identity. And from an ethnological perspective, there can be two kinds of Macedonians, Greeks who are Macedonians and Macedonians who are not Greeks.
Your research in Melbourne a number of years ago found you facing similar kinds of dilemmas and similar kinds of discussions for peoples living here who came from the Balkans, from that part of the world, and who were faced with decisions here about their own identity and what to call themselves and each other. And a paper of yours that I read has the title, and I wonder if you'd be so good, please, to tell the story of how can a woman give birth to one Greek and one Macedonian?
That was a really interesting situation I found myself in, and I was attending a dance in Melbourne sponsored by the immigrants from a particular village in northern Greece near Florina, and was talking to a man who identified himself as a Macedonian, not a Greek, and he told me how his family ended up in Melbourne, and actually after the Civil War, the older brother and his father fled to Yugoslavia, and the younger brother remained in Greece with his mother. And eventually the whole family emigrated to Australia, and the older brother came on a Yugoslav passport, the other brother came on a Greek passport, and they all found themselves living together in a house in Melbourne, and it was very difficult because the two brothers were arguing all the time about what they were, and the older brother said, we're Macedonians, not Greeks, and the younger brother said, now we're Greeks. Things got so contentious that they finally confronted their mother and said, how is it possible for a woman to give birth to one Greek and one Macedonian? And the person who was telling me the story didn't bother to tell me how his mother answered the question.
No, people should listen to their mothers better, shouldn't they?
That's right, but he didn't. He just insisted to me that it's not possible. We're both Macedonians, and my brother's a victim of Greek propaganda. And I'm quite confident that if I spoke to the other brother, he would have told me it's not possible for a woman to give birth to one Greek and one Macedonian. We're both Greeks, and my brother is victim of Macedonian propaganda. But as an anthropologist, I have a very different perspective on things, and I feel that it is possible for a woman to give birth to one Greek and one Macedonian, or to put it more accurately, it's possible for a woman to give birth to two sons, one of whom develops a Macedonian identity and the other develops a Greek identity, precisely because Greeks and Macedonians are not born, they're made. National identities are not biologically given at birth in blood or genes, but they're socially constructed over time in historical and political processes. So whether somebody from northern Greece went to high school in Greece, or whether they went to the Greek army, or whether they emigrated to Melbourne before high school in the army and ended up living in an area with other people who had a Macedonian, not a Greek, national identity, what church they ended up attending, who they ended up marrying, all those factors influence how somebody develops a national identity.
On the mutability of identity and hence what names we can apply to ourselves and each other, Loring Danforth, the professor and chair of the anthropology department at Bates University in Lewiston, Maine. Lots of references on this week's website and the transcript as well. Check it out. For Lingua Franca, here on ABC Radio National, I'm Maria Zylstra. Yassas.
You've been listening to another ABC Radio National podcast. ABC Radio National, on air and online, with many of our programs available as podcasts or MP3 downloads. All the details at abc.net.au/rn/podcast.